Hey everybody, this is Mike with the Mountain Weekly News. Welcome to episode number 10 of Everything Snowboarding and More. That is the Diaz for any of our Hispanic audience. So this week we've got special guest Stephen Koch. Stephen Koch is the first snowboarder to have ever climbed up and snowboarded down the seven summits in the world. So be sure to listen in for that interview. It is just absolutely amazing. We also take a look at recent avalanche deaths and near misses that have taken place in North America over the past week. Also, Jackson Hole Mountain Resort plans expansion, so we've got a firsthand some insider knowledge on that. We're going to take a look at the medical marijuana industry and what's happening in the state of Montana right now. And we're also going to look at the grizzly bears. Grizzly bears are being delisted by the federal government. So we'll kind of talk about the ramifications of all of that. So we've got a lot more, as well as, you know, the business side of snowboarding and all that fun stuff. So yeah, this is going to be a great episode. I'm really happy to be here. Episode number 10. I appreciate the support. And let's kick this one off with a bang. It's going to be a great one. So last Saturday, we had a snowmobiler die in the Chugach Mountains of Alaska. Unfortunately, two people were caught in this slide, and one snowmobiler ended up dying. You know, the word on the street right now is that it is absolutely going off in Haines. So I'm guessing most of Alaska has a very thick snowpack right now. Especially with what's been happening up in the Pacific Northwest with all that moisture. And, you know, all that moisture is going to continue to go up north. So, yeah, lots of snow in Alaska. So anybody heading up to Alaska this April or late March, just be mindful. You know, it's going to be a very different snowpack than you're used to. And there's definitely a lot of snow. Unfortunately, the 23rd avalanche death this winter happened on Monday. And this accident, this is kind of an interesting story. On Monday of last week, the body of 23-year-old ski instructor Carson May was found outside of the Sugar Bowl ski area boundaries. And what happened here is he actually went out of bounds about a month ago in January. And it ended up taking them 1 month to find his body, even though his cell phone, they were able to get a ping off the area where he was located. I believe that Tahoe and that area in particular has had a pretty decent snowpack this year as well. And so it looks like he went out of bounds on a snowy day and unfortunately got caught in an avalanche. And it took a month before they were able to get his body back to his family. So thoughts go out to the family of Carson May and everybody up at Sugar Bowl and all the search and rescue personnel. That couldn't have been fun to, you know, to be blunt, have to pull a body out of the snow that's been there for a month. In Idaho, we had some interesting avalanche news, and this one wasn't actually an avalanche on a mountain, but this is interesting. According to Fremont County Sheriff Lynn Humphreys, a roof avalanche collapsed near Island Park, Idaho. Now, Island Park, Idaho is between here and Bozeman, and it is a location that a lot of snowmobilers go that just has a ton of snow. So what happened was, three children were outside playing when the roof collapsed, and the roof had so much snow on it, it actually collapsed and buried the children for 30 minutes. The children ended up being revived at the scene. They were flown out. It was two 7-year-olds and a 3-year-old, and they ended up being flown to a local hospital, and they survived. But, you know, you have to think it's not just in the mountains that this can happen. And earlier this winter, all the snow was really shedding on our roofs here in Jackson. And so I took some photos and I said, this is a great way to explain the snowpack. And you can kind of see, you know, how the snow is just, you know, holding on to the roofs. And when that snow releases, you know, gravity's going to take over. And at that point, you know, you just don't want to be under it. I mean, you see signs in towns a lot of times in ski towns that say, you know, don't park here, you know, roof avalanche, you know, danger falling snow. So it's something to be very mindful of. In Wyoming, we've got a couple of different stories about Wyoming today. The first is about Jackson Hole Mountain Resort. Jackson Hole Mountain Resort is set for an avalanche of growth. President Jerry Bland was awarded the Big Wyoming Award last week from Governor Matt Mead. And during that award speech, Jerry Bland, the president of Jackson Hole Mountain Resort, said that there's plenty of work to do at Jackson Hole Mountain Resort, and he has plans to build another 4 to 5 chairlifts. Did you just hear that? The president of Jackson Hole Mountain Resort said he has plans to build another 4 to 5 chairlifts. So as you kind of think about that for a little while and let that fester, I'm going to stop this interview stop the podcast now, and we're going to switch over to our interview with Stephen Koch, and then we'll finish up the podcast after the interview with Stephen. So again, thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 10, and be sure to really listen to what Stephen Koch has to say. This is somebody that has done things that just basically unhuman things, and he's lived to tell the tale, and we can all learn a lot from people like him. So thanks again, and be sure to enjoy the interview. Peace. Hey everybody, this is Mike with Mountain Weekly News. I'm here with special guest today, Stephen Koch. According to Wikipedia, Stephen Koch is an American adventurer, risk management expert, professional speaker, extreme snowboarder, mountaineer, guide, and pioneer of the field of snowboard mountaineering. That's actually a term that Stephen coined. So with great pleasure, I introduce you to El Gringo con Carne, Stephen Koch.
How you doing, Mike?
Good, Stephen. How you been?
I've been well, thanks.
So where are you at these days? Are you back in Jackson? You live in California, globetrotting? Where is Stephen Koch?
I am right here in Jackson.
Awesome. And let's see, you came to Jackson in 1987?
Yes.
What brought you out here?
Snowboarding the village.
Snowboarding the village. let's see, speaking of snowboarding, you know, a lot of people know about Jeremy Jones, obviously, but you're the first guy to snowboard off the Seven Summits. Tell me, I mean, to our readers, what does that mean, essentially?
Yeah, well, snowboarding the Seven Summits, I snowboarded on all of them, and, you know, from the summit of 6 of them, partway down the north face of Everest, where in 2003 I turned around short of the top and soon after ended the Seven Summits snowboarding quest at 6.5. And it took years to really come to terms with that and get that monkey off my back. I had...
We've got an interruption for a whining dog. It's okay. It's not my dog today, though. Char loves to do that.
So, yeah, you know, it's about, I was carrying this monkey because I went up and was doing the Seven Summits for the reason to feel accepted from people. And, you know, I wanted accolades for what I was doing. And that was a big reason why I was doing all this stuff, you know, risking my life. And I mean, it was also something that I really loved, and you know, my ego was driving me, which was a good thing in a lot of ways, but my ego was also pushing me so far for, you know, in hindsight, really superficial reasons, not heart-centered, not connected reasons, ego, bullshit reasons, really, you know, look at me, aren't I cool, versus, wow, I'm really centered, I'm at peace with myself, which I am now, especially in regards to the Seven Summits. It's a long-winded answer to your question.
That's great. And when you mentioned, you know, your ego, I read something about, you know, Marco Severetti, and when he had gone on Everest, I think the second time, and he had actually used oxygen to go up versus your attempts, you did not use oxygen. Is that correct? And was that part of that ego thing?
That's correct, that we did not use oxygen or have oxygen with us when we tried the North Face. And that was the plan the whole time. What was the other part of the question?
And then compared to, you know, Marco Severetti and other people had gone, I mean, you chose to do that without oxygen for more of the pure, was that more of a pure mountaineering aspect?
Yeah, essentially, I feel using oxygen is cheating, you know, and I didn't want to cheat myself of that experience of knowing what it would be like to be on the mountain, to be truly present on the mountain, knowing where I am, breathing the air that's available, you know, because most of the issues that people run into on high mountains using oxygen are
when the oxygen runs out, people crumple. And that's happened numerous times. That's usually what the issue is people running out of oxygen and not knowing where they are. They're not present or connected to themselves. It's all artificial.
Wow, that's absolutely heavy, Stephen. You know, and when you were 29 years old, you had an interesting experience up on Mount Owen here in the Tetons. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, I know we're kind of digging deep here, but...
Oh, yeah, I'm happy to tell you about that. You could call it interesting. That's one way to describe nearly dying in an avalanche. Yeah, I was trying to make the first snowboard descent or descent of any kind. It hadn't been skied. The Northeast Snowfields route on Mount Owen. It was the second, or Mount Owen's the second highest and most challenging of the Teton Peaks. And the Northeast Snowfields, this iconic, beautiful, huge face with hanging snowfields, you know, for 5,000 feet from just under 13,000 feet down, is just, it was so alluring. And, you know, at the time, I was talking to TGR about filming on the mountain and doing a production with them. But then I was just like, no, I don't want to do that. It's too much effort, too many variables that are out of my control if I bring other people on. And that's something, you know, that I often did, was I just went alone because it was so easy. I could just go. I was willing to take the risk of being alone. I actually liked being alone. And I liked that experience of just being one with the mountain without distraction from other people. You know, especially back then, that's, I believe, why I was so successful, was going out alone. And I went out alone on this particular day on April 22nd. And, you know, was climbing in very challenging conditions, breakable snow, and was way later than I had anticipated being there. But I continued on. I was like, you know, I want this descent. It's really warm, but I'm going to keep going. Rather than go straight up the face, I'll cut left to the Coven Col and wait there and assess the situation when there. So a little bit shy of that, you know, I heard a noise above me, and it was an avalanche that came down and hit me and carried me, you know, ultimately 2,000 feet down the mountain, breaking my back and tearing ligaments in both knees, and left me... nearly dead, but I didn't die, and I was able to traverse off to the side, out of the way of more avalanches that were to follow soon after. I had one ice axe left, my snowboard, backpack, all gone, backpack ripped off my back. And then I worked my way down the mountain and had a long, cold night alone with no shelter, with no warm clothes, No stove, no nothing. And I ended up surviving by breathing this really fast, shallow breath, which got my blood flowing. It's called breath of fire. And that got my blood flowing through my body, and I was able to survive this super cold night. You know, it definitely froze that night. And then the next morning, helicopter came. And it landed above me. I hear the footsteps get louder and louder. And I look up and see the Rangers. And I look at them. I smile. I see them smiling. And we say basically the same thing, which is, man, I'm glad to see you. And I relaxed because I was in their hands at that point, and I slipped into just this intense hypothermia, uncontrolled shaking. And they took care of me and put me on a backboard and flew me to St. John's Hospital in Jackson, where I was, you know, feeling pretty happy, getting hot blankets from hot nurses. You know, it's like, yeah, life is good right now. So when you're stoked to be in an emergency room, you know, you've had a pretty rough time, and I did. And I was really grateful to be alive. And I immediately had it in my mind that I was going to go back to Mount Owen and I was going to recover from all these injuries without even knowing the extent of them. And I was like, okay, I got to get back. I got to do it. And I'm going to make some changes, you know, because I, in hindsight, I'd look and I was late. I didn't check the forecast that well. I went when it was warm. I continued on. I didn't have a turnaround time based on conditions. I was ignoring what was right underfoot, literally. These signs, which were right there, telltale signs in hindsight. And I kept ignoring them one after the next, and I paid the price. And so after recovering from these injuries and having four knee surgeries that summer and doing 9 months of intensive physical therapy, I went back and it took two more tries. I went with partners and was able to make that descent, the first descent of the Northeast Snowfields of Mount Owen. And what I learned was that I could survive and that I was a survivor and that I could get through, you know, a really heinous experience. And that gave me inner strength, knowing that I could do that. And then I continued on with the seven summits at that point. I believe had done three at that point and then went to Antarctica.
And I mean, obviously, just hearing that story from Steven, I mean, Steven's a survivor. Steven's not somebody that's going to give up. These days, Steven's actually working as a motivational speaker and goes to corporate events across the world. And so anybody that's in the snowboard industry, if you're listening to this and you want somebody to come and talk to the young pups, I would highly recommend. I mean, this Steven has some stories to tell. A lot of people probably, you know, again, they know about Jeremy Jones and you know about everybody that's doing this stuff now. But when you really look into the history of this, I mean, there's a run here called, what is it, Talk is Cheap? Is that, I mean, and this is named after Steven. I mean, this guy has put some of the most legendary lines down here in the Tetons and worldwide for that matter. And, you know, the accident on Mount Owen, speaking to other people and doing some research on that, most people would not have survived that. He talked about his breathing technique. You know, I've heard Steven do this speech before. I mean, he was broken and he had to crawl himself down the mountain and still get out of the avalanche terrain. And that's called not giving up. And so again, when you talk about motivating somebody, I'm just really proud to have Steven as a mentor and a friend and somebody that kicks my ass going out in the Tetons all the time, you know, trying to follow him, splitboarding and going up Glory. The dude's just an animal. And, you know, so again, if you're looking for somebody, especially in the corporate world, to talk about how not to give up and how to succeed in life and how to follow your dreams and your passions, I can't think of a better person to talk to than Steven Koch. And to wrap this up, you know, Steven, are there any tips? What would you recommend to somebody that wants to get into the backcountry or wants to get into skiing or snowboarding off-piste? You know, there's obviously a lot of gear right now, but what would be a good first step for somebody that wants to do some of the things that you've done?
Find a mentor and take a risk by asking someone to help you. Be vulnerable enough to get shot down, and if they say no, that's okay. You know, it's really not about you. It's what they got going on in their life if someone says no, but usually people will be touched and honored to help, you know, when you're asked and when you ask them. So that's the number one thing. You know, I had an amazing mentor in Tom Turiano, who literally took me under his wing and showed me the ropes and how to use the tools of Mountaineer. Another guy, Kevin Pusey, a longtime ski patrolman here. He took me out and taught me how to use crampons and self-arrest, use an ice axe. I asked him, I said, hey, will you teach me how to do this stuff? And they said, yeah, they were happy to. So that's my number one suggestion is be a mentee. And, on the other end of that, if you have the experience, be a mentor and be willing to share your knowledge and your experience with people, because it's super rewarding and you can be helping someone, you know, make a career and a life and change people's lives. You know, that's what
I think those two did for me as I got into this as a career and then got into guiding for 20 years and helped people work through, you know, fears and self-imposed limitations. And it was a great, great fun way to make a living. You know, also terrifying and brutal on the body, but everything has its cost.
For sure. And now this is, you know, the second or third person that's mentioned mentors. We had Will from Spark talk about that. We had Tyler from Karakoram. We have Stephen Koch. I mean, this is, I've mentioned this. I mean, find a mentor. If you're able to mentor other people, you know, be a mentoree. I mean, and for more information on Stephen Koch, Stephen, if somebody's interested in booking you for speaking engagement, what's the best way to get in touch with you or just to find out what you've been doing?
Through my website, which is stephenkoch.com, StephenKoch.com. And then, you know, through Instagram, Stephen_Koch, and Twitter, I do a little bit, but more Instagram. I like doing that. And I'll probably be doing more of that. As I, you know, work on a couple new things, I'll be doing some more broadcasting. I've been pretty quiet lately, but I think that's about to change.
Awesome. Well, Stephen, I appreciate your friendship and being a mentor to me and just for being somebody that's led this industry to where it is right now, because we have a lot to thank you. So I hope that other people respect what you've been doing in this industry. And yeah, just keep it up. Steven's a family man. He's got children. I mean, he's got a dog. The guy's living the dream. So if you ever see Steven, be sure to give him a big high five. And more importantly, like I said, for public speaking engagement, I can't think of anybody better. So appreciate it, Steven. And look forward to going on a tour tomorrow with you.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Cool, dude.
Solid. Okay, so that was a great interview that I did with Stephen Koch. And yeah, again, David, we can all learn a lot from him. It's just amazing that, you know, the difference between Stephen Koch and Jeremy Jones, to be honest, Stephen Koch, he doesn't hire a guide. And, you know, no offense to Jeremy and what Jeremy's doing, but, you know, Stephen's the guy that takes people up mountains and takes himself up mountains. And a lot of the other snowboarders that you see in the videos and stuff, they have guides, they have guide services. I have friends that, you know, I have a friend that takes the Brain Farm crew out, and, you know, I know the guy that takes the TGR crew out. So it's, you know, Stephen Koch, he's a legend, and I hope that, his speaking engagements take off so that he can get the, due credit that he deserves. In Montana, medical marijuana providers in Missoula have taken a somber but defiant stand in the wake of last Thursday's 6-1 ruling by the Montana Supreme Court that severely restricts the ability to do business. Essentially, what's happening is Montana has medical marijuana dispensaries. Well, the Supreme Court in Montana has decided that these businesses, these dispensaries that are providing medicine to patients, are now only able to provide medical marijuana to 3 patients. So your retail store in Missoula or wherever in, you know, Bozeman or anywhere in Montana is now only able to sell marijuana to 3 patients. Well, there's some 14,000 patients in the state of Montana right now, and that number will continue to grow. This law essentially is going to take 12,000 of those patients and say, oh, sorry, you no longer have access to medical marijuana. Medical marijuana is medicine. It is not a drug. It needs to be looked at as medicine. This is something I'll continue to hammer down. I'm shocked. I'm surprised that Montana is taking this stance, and I hope the citizens stand up, and I hope the citizens of this country stand up. I mean, this is fucking bullshit. Medical marijuana, it has a reason to be here. It helps people. It helps save lives. I'm going to get fired up on that. So, you know, it's just unfortunate that the bureaucracy of the government is trying to tell us what is good for our health and what is not. Because I'll tell you what, I know what's better for my health than anybody in Washington or anybody in freaking the Supreme Court or, probably more than my doctor, to be quite honest. So speaking of the government, in Washington, the federal government thinks it's time to delist the grizzly bears from the endangered species list. It's great to see the grizzly bear population is back. And Yeah, grizzly bears were on the brink of extinction. And at one time in North America, there was hundreds of thousands of these grizzly bears running around, you know, the mountains of the West. And I think now we've got about 600 or 700 of them in the National Park, Yellowstone and Grand Teton Park. And I think what's happening is essentially they believe that number is strong enough to start to allow hunting of grizzly bears again. Now, the hunting of the grizzly bear will not happen within the national parks, but in the surrounding communities, you know, the surrounding states, Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, North Dakota, we're now looking at potentially opening up grizzly hunts. I think if you go out and hunt a grizzly bear and something bad happens to you, karma is a bitch. And I don't think we need to be going out and messing with grizzly bears. Let them do their thing. It's kind of like the wolves that we talked about last week. This is really a delicate subject for me, because when man comes in and starts trying to play God, and when man starts trying to play creator, and when man starts trying to regulate animal herds, we haven't really talked about the elk issue here in Jackson. So essentially there's tons of area here in Jackson that I like to go and take my dog to that for 4 months of the year are off limits to human activity. This is an area that they allow the elk to gather. Along with that, they also have these elk feeding grounds. And what they do is they bring these pellets of food and they just drop food down for the elk. So the elk know this. They've figured it out over years and centuries. I mean, this has been going on for, you know, early 1900s. And so the elk basically come to these areas here in Jackson or right outside of Jackson, and they sit and they feed and they eat. Well, that doesn't happen in nature. God, you know, there's no, you know, if the elk can't survive, and because the town of Jackson's here, if the elk don't have a migration corridor, well, the elk need to go somewhere else. And the only reason we're protecting the elk is so that people can come here and hunt the elk. That's the irony of all this. So when we talk about delisting the grizzly bears, yeah, it's great, but why? Is this strictly a revenue producer? Because if that's the case, no, don't go and touch grizzly bears. And anybody that says grizzly bears should be delisted from up in Washington, maybe they should come out and go hike in grizzly bear territory. Because, So anyway, enough of politics. I guess that's kind of politics. Back to the business side of snowboarding. 2015, U.S. snowboard statistics were released from the National Ski Area Association and the National Ski and Snowboard Retailers Association. In 2015, U.S. snowboarders totaled 5,675,000 participants. That number is down 500,000 participants from 2007. So when you hear people saying that the industry is dying, that number right there says that there's less participants in 2015 than there was in 2017 by a number of 500,000. However, that being said, in 2000, that number was actually lower than it is currently. So right now in 2015, we have 1.5 million more participants than we did in 2000. So between 2000 and 2015, the sport of snowboarding has seen 1.5 million new participants. What we're seeing is 2007 might have been the burst, might have been the bubble. But again, the fact that we are up from 2000, that's great news, because that's right when I got into it. That's when most of the people I knew. So yeah, snowboarding, good. There is business and money to be made. Okay, so 57.7% of snowboarders are aged between 12 and 24 years old, with 25% of snowboarders being between 25 and 44 years old, and 17% of snowboarders being aged 7 to 11. So this is, again, these were the numbers that were put out by the National Ski Area Association and the National Retailers Association. 57.7% of snowboarders are between 12 and 24. That's a major number. It's kind of a bummer to not see more of the older snowboarders, but I get it. People get married, they have kids, they get wives, things happen. However, according to Burton Snowboard's 2015 marketing strategy, which I was able to find online, I'm pretty good with Google, 51% of snowboarders are under the age of 17, with 73% being under 25. So Burton is saying that 51% of their snowboarders are under 17. And it's really interesting. Burton's target audience, they are going after single white males, age 12 to 30. They are planning to target upper to middle class users in areas with snow or areas near snow. And for all of my marketing friends out there, Burton spent $210,000 on digital marketing in 2015. So I got to ask you, what are you spending on digital marketing in 2015? You really want to focus digital. You can see the ROI, you can see the ROR. Digital is where people go to research. People don't go to magazines to research to buy stuff. If people are in the buying funnel, they're online, they're digital, they're mobile, they're tablet, they're connected. So the 21st century, 2016, moving forward, snowboarding, digital, focus. back to business. Snowboard market sales. According to SIA, snowboard market sales in the fourth quarter of 2015 were down 4% in total dollars. Snowboards were down 4% nationally in total sales. However, up 25% in the West. Thank you, Mount Baker. Yeah, I mean, that's, again, as we kind of talked about earlier with the number of, you know, skis versus snowboards, I mean, 25% at Mount Baker, that's incredible. The West Coast, people snowboard on the West Coast. You go out to Squaw, you go out to Mammoth, you're probably going to see more snowboarders than skiers. And that's rad. There's that surf, snowboard, skate culture. Keep it alive. Let the skiers hang out on the East Coast. No offense to everyone on the East Coast. Alpine sales, Alpine ski sales were down 3% nationally. However, they were only up 8% in the West. Now, if snowboards were up 25% in the West and skis were only up 8% in the West, what does that tell you? Again, more people snowboard in the West. I mean, it's just, I haven't seen those actual numbers to say that, but it'd be interesting if somebody comes out with that. My guess, yeah, again, more snowboarders in the West. Outerwear sales were also down 3%. However, outerwear is accounting for 40% of total snow sports sales right now. That, again, that we talked about it last week. That's why we focus really heavily on the jacket reviews and stuff. We need to start doing snowboard pant reviews, but yeah, jackets are really important. So again, that this is going to wrap it up. This has been a really fun episode, episode number 10. It was an absolute pleasure. I have to thank you, Stephen Koch, if you're listening. I hope you are. You know, it was just so nice to talk to you, and I appreciate being able to have you as a friend and a mentor. And for everybody out there in the mountains, and everybody in life, you know, find a mentor, whatever you want to do in life, whether it's business. You know, I have Marcus. Marcus is probably listening to this. Play It By Ear Productions for business. You know, there's many mentors that people that you can. There's always going to be somebody better than you, and there's always going to be somebody smarter. And find those people out. And be a sponge and learn that information. And information is power. And especially when it comes to backcountry skiing and, you know, the longer that you're at it, the wiser that you're going to be. It's just that's how it is. And to wrap it all up, you know, there was a quote from Paul Petzl, a famous climber, you know, Petzl climbing gear. He had spent a lot of time here in the Tetons. And he said, you know, there's old climbers. And there's bold climbers, but there's not any old climbers that are bold. So on that note, I leave you with episode number 10, Everything Snowboarding and More. Be safe out there, be smart, and be sure to live to ride another day. Peace.